At dawn on the 15th day after leaving Galala, they lay hidden on the hills to the east of Ismailia, from where they could overlook the town. The main highway ran below their lookout post, and the army of the two pharaohs would have to pass this way. Ismailia was the Egyptian border fortress, and a natural starting point for the campaign. "It seems that our intelligence is good enough," Nefer called down to Taita. He'd climbed one of the tall cedar trees on the front slope of the hill, and from there he had a fine, uninterrupted view over many leagues of terrain. "The town's swarming with activity. There are horse lines and cities of tents outside the walls of the fort." He shaded his eyes. "The clouds of dust coming up the road from the delta. It looks like all the wagons and chariots of Egypt are on the march." He continued to call down his sightings to the Magus through the rest of the morning until the heat had built up to the point where all activity around the city and upon the roads fell off into the somnolent noonday. Then he climbed down and went to find shade, like the rest of the squadron, to wait out the hot hours. In the late afternoon, as the air cooled, they roused themselves to feed and water the horses. Then Nefer climbed once more to his vantage point. It was at once apparent that they'd arrived just in time. The road to the east was an artery pulsing with the life force of a mighty army. Squadron after squadron, 50 chariots strong, wound through the gates of Ismailia, each followed by wagons carrying their baggage and fodder, and streamed down the road towards their hiding place. The vanguard passed so close to where Nefer sat in the high branches of the cedar tree that he could make out individuals among them. The army flowed by like an endless river, glinting with the reflections of bronze weapons, and the dust rose in a dense cloud over it all until it threatened to obscure the sun. 4 cohorts made up the vanguard, and then came a gap. Obviously, this was to let the dust settle a little, and to alleviate the discomfort of the royal party that followed. Next came 2 chariots riding abreast. Both vehicles were so massive and covered with gold leaf that each needed 6 horses to draw it. Nefer's hatred rose with the taste of gall into the back of his throat as he recognized the drivers. Trok had the reins of the nearest chariot. There was no mistaking his broad shoulders, nor the dark, beribboned bush of his beard. He wore a gold helmet shaped like a beehive, decorated with a crest of foaming white ostrich plumes. On his shoulder clanged a double shield, each leaf as thick as his thumb, and so weighty it was said that he alone of all his army could wield it, just like the great war bow in the rack at his right hand. In the other great chariot rode Pharaoh Naja Kiafan. Like his namesake, the cobra, he cut a slimmer, more graceful figure. He wore a pectoral of gold and precious stones that sparkled in the red sunlight that filtered through the dust clouds. On his head he wore the blue war crown of Egypt, and at his side, sheathed in silver and electrum, studded with turquoise and lapis lazuli, was the legendary blue sword that he'd plundered from the body of Nefer's father. Strangely, though he lacked the physical stature of Trok, Naja was the more threatening of the two. The golden chariots passed and were hidden by their own dust clouds, but Nefer remained stretched out on the main branch of the cedar tree as the warlike phalanxes rolled by below him. The sun had slipped below the horizon, but there was still just enough light to make out the next section of the endless procession. Nefer straightened up with renewed interest and attention. Swaying and rolling over the surface of the highway, which was already rutted by the passage of the hundreds of chariots and wagons that had preceded them, came 2 litters drawn by teams of bullocks. They were so capacious, the silk curtains decorated with golden stars and rosettes, that Nefer knew the passengers within must be women of the royal harem. Nefer could not imagine Trok taking his wives or concubines on campaign with him. He had heard that Trok relied for his pleasure on the prisoners he took from the captured towns, and that he enjoyed boys or girls with equal gusto. So if they did not belong to Trok, they must be Narja's women. Nefa wondered if Narja had tired of Heseret and taken other wives. Then the curtain of the second litter jerked open. A girl jumped down into the dusty roadway and skipped along beside the bullocks. Though she'd changed markedly since he'd last seen her, he could not doubt that this lovely creature was Merikara, his younger sister. She no longer wore the side lock of childhood. Her hair was bobbed upon her shoulders and cut in a thick, straight fringe at the level of her eyebrows. The loss of her side lock was the token that she had seen her first red moon. Nefer felt a pang that his funny little monkey was a child no more. Then it occurred to him that there was no longer any impediment to Narja taking Merikara to the connubial bed. He'd heard that Narja was a voluptuous satyr, and the idea of him ravishing his little sister revolted Nefer so much that he could taste it in the back of his throat like rotten fish. He felt an overwhelming desire to speak to Merikara, to learn if she was happy, if there was aught he could do to make her lot easier. Then it occurred to him to rescue her and take her back to Galala. He knew that such thoughts were dangerous, and that his comrades would try to dissuade him from such suicidal fantasy. Following close behind the litters, he saw the carts carrying the war chests of the false pharaohs. Here was a motive that the others would understand. They were unornamented carts, painted a dull, sombre blue, but sturdily built, and with the trucks reinforced to withstand the great weight of their cargo. The metal-shod wheels cut deeply into the road surface. The doors at the rear of the truck bed were chained and locked, and armed men marched beside them. These were the standard conveyances of the treasures, without which no army marched. Nefer knew that they contained gold bullion cast into bars and fingers, rings and beads. These would be used to pay the troops and to buy the allegiance of minor kings and satraps, to subvert the allies of Babylon and Assyria, and to bribe spies and informers in the ranks of the enemy. Nefer slid down the trunk of the cedar to the ground. Taita was dozing quietly there, but he opened his eyes before Nefer could touch his arm. "The war chests of the false pharaohs," Nefer whispered in his ear. "Enough to pay an army or buy a throne."